welcome to the Grow Your English podcast with English Language Tree. Hello, hello, and welcome to the Grow Your English podcast. You are very welcome from wherever you are listening in the world today. And this episode is the first in a mini series of exam-related episodes, all about the Cambridge exams. My guest today is Sangeeta Sate, who is an English teacher and Cambridge exams specialist. She's particularly interested in how you learn a language, and what works best for each individual student. Preparing for a language exam is challenging, so Sangeeta believes the experience should be as enjoyable, useful, and effective as possible. She is also a Cambridge speaking examiner and works for Cambridge, writing materials and giving training. This helps other teachers prepare their students so you can be confident that she knows these exams backwards, which is why I've invited her here today. Welcome, Sangeeta.
Hello, nice to be here.
It's really lovely to have you, and thank you for giving us your exam expertise today. I've got a few questions for you, and the episode today is related to the Cambridge B2 first exam. It used to be called FCE, First Certificate in English.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, and that's one of the exams that you currently teach. All right, so let's start off then with why should people take B2 first?
Okay, so this exam, lots of people take in order to prove their level of English. Really, that is the reason people do it. And that might be for work, for their studies, to get a promotion. Mm-hmm. And I think the most important thing is, if you need to prove your level of English, you need to find out exactly how, because not every employer or not every university or whatever wants the same qualification. So the people that come to me already know that B2 first is one that's going to be accepted. Mm-hmm. I think the other thing to add is, you know, some people do exams for pleasure, for themselves.
They do.
And I think with this exam, it's a really thorough, rigorous exam. So if you do this and pass, you know that you have a B2 level.
Mm-hmm. So yeah, and a B2 across all skills as well.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Great. Thank you. So could you give us a brief overview of the exam, please?
Exactly. Yeah. So as you mentioned, it covers all four skills. So there is a writing exam, speaking, listening, and the reading paper also includes a section called use of English. Mm-hmm. And this tests your knowledge of grammar and vocabulary. But there are four exams in all. You can take it on paper in a traditional way. There's also a digital exam mm-hmm. now, so you can take it on a computer. It's exactly the same exam. Mm-hmm. The speaking test is still done in person with two real life examiners.
Yeah.
But if you do the digital exam, you get your results a bit faster.
Okay, so, but it's the same exam, just in a slightly different
format. Exactly the same material. Preparation is the same.
Yeah, exactly. And what I like about the speaking part of the exam in particular is that it's done with another English learner, so you're not on your own with the examiner like you would be in IELTS, for example.
Yeah. But, I mean, that has pros and cons. Mm-hmm. And so I think you need to be prepared for that, and you need to have practiced with someone else, because, you know, it affects your experience in the exam when you're with someone you don't know.
Yeah, that's true. And I think sometimes, seeing as we're talking about speaking, students sometimes worry that the performance of the other candidate can influence their score, but that's not the case, is it?
Absolutely not, no. So examiners are trained to just focus on the individual performance. However, you are marked on things like your interaction with the other candidate. So that it's not just your grammar and vocabulary that you're being marked on. There's lots of other things that they're looking at, things that make communication real and authentic, I think. But yeah, super important that if you're with someone really good or not so good, that doesn't affect your score.
And does that also apply to if you're paired with somebody that's very talkative or perhaps less so?
So they're, what they do doesn't affect you, but how you deal with that will affect your score. So again, you need to have practice in dealing with those situations, I think, or just being prepared for them.
Yeah, great advice. Okay.
But I think that's like real life, no?
Yeah.
That, you know, sometimes you might be talking to someone who doesn't let you talk, so you need to be prepared for those situations.
Yeah, maybe some phrases for kind of jumping in, interjecting.
Absolutely.
Responding. Yeah.
And that's the kind of thing that I work with my students to help them deal with those kind of situations.
Yeah, yeah. So I also work one-to-one with students, but
yeah,
often, if not always, try to find a partner that they can at least have a practice run of the speaking part. Yeah.
Yeah, same. I think it's very difficult to do the speaking test without having practiced it in an exam like situation.
You know? Yeah.
You want to know what it's going to feel like when you go into that into that room.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah. And the timings and what's said and
yes.
Yeah, the kind of protocol. Yeah. Great.
Yeah.
So we've spoken there a little bit about speaking, but what are the best ways, do you think, to improve for each part of the Cambridge B2 First?
Okay, so that is a huge question.
Yes.
And my short answer is it really depends on the individual student. So obviously everyone's different and has skills and strengths in different areas. Mm-hmm. So when I work with my students, we focus on the areas that they need to improve on. However, I think my key bits of advice would be, one, get to know the exam. Mm. You need to understand the format of each part so you know what to expect. And again, talking about speaking, for example, it's one thing to have a conversation, but in the Cambridge B2 First speaking test, it's very structured. So you really need to know exactly what they want from you to perform your best in quite a short space of time.
Yeah.
You don't have a lot of time to show them how brilliant you are.
Mm.
So get to know the exam. Mm-hmm. And then I think in terms of preparation, allow yourself time.
Yeah.
There isn't, I don't think, a quick way to improve. I know that some people are looking for get me through B2 First in 1 month, and that's possible. And I understand sometimes that's necessary, but I like to work with people over a longer period of time so that what you learn, you remember afterwards and can use in the future.
Yeah. And apply to daily life as well. Yeah. I think that's a really good point because it is a limited time, especially in the speaking, and you don't know what's going to come up, and you need to have had exposure to quite a wide variety of topics.
Yeah.
So you're kind of prepared to start speaking and get all your great language in before the examiner says thank you and you have to stop.
Yeah, you haven't got time to be thinking about, oh, what great language can I use? But even in the writing exam, it needs to be there. So it's automatic. And I think that takes time to kind of have all that language so sort of natural that you can use it automatically.
Yeah, yeah.
Without thinking.
I would agree with that, yeah. So we've spoken about speaking. Any tips for improving in terms of the reading and use of English, other than reading widely? Any strategies that you could share?
I mean, again, in terms of reading, reading widely, reading regularly, but I think reading actively. So whatever you do, you need to be kind of noticing new language, recording it, and that's the way that you can incorporate it in your own, into your own sort of vocabulary.
Can you expand on what you mean when you say recording it?
So that can be in a number of different ways, but maybe that's writing it down, maybe it's putting it into your phone, maybe it's literally recording it. If that's something you like doing, it could be, you know, recording it.
Voice recording.
Speaking. Yeah, exactly. Thank you. Voice recording. But you need to make a record of the new language you see so that you can go back and review it and use it again and practice it. The only way that we can expand our range of language is by practicing it and using it again and again and again.
And not just writing lists and then kind of putting it aside, but
doing something with those lists.
And then that in turn promotes noticing, and when you meet it again you think, I know what it means, I can use it this way.
I think like challenging yourself to kind of notice and find new words every time you read something, even on Instagram, you know, just look for something. I've never seen that used like that, or I've not seen that little phrase before. The more you do that, the more you see it, and the more natural it becomes.
And you said there that little phrase, so looking at language in chunks and not just in isolation. And
that's really key. In these exams, and as you go higher up in these exams in particular, like how you use phrases and chunks and collocations is really important.
Definitely. And do you think that carries over then into tips you might give for the listening part of the test?
So listening, as well as listening kind of quite widely, I think you need to do focused listening. And one thing I always recommend my students do is mini dictations. So just listening to maybe 20 seconds of something and trying to write down every single word. Listen again and again until you've got every word. And then, you know, you can do it, I don't know, with a TED talk if you have a transcript. So listen to this 30 seconds, focus, write it down, and then compare it to the transcript and see where the differences are, what you missed, what mistakes you made, why, what was the problem. And I think doing that every day, like 5 minutes of that every day, would really see improvements in your listening.
Definitely. That's very powerful. I'm just going to mention actually that I did on my Instagram a little series of intensive listening clips that I'd taken from radio or people that I've spoken to. I think between 20 seconds up to a minute. A minute's probably a bit long for a dictation, but
I think so, maybe. I saw those.
Oh, did you? Okay.
I'm a big fan. And I think you need both of these things. So this kind of intensive listening and, you know, listening to a whole podcast, for example, or, you know, watching Netflix. So those two things in combination.
Yeah, that's really true, isn't it? A combination of approaches is a really good way to improve. Yeah, great. So I think maybe we haven't spoken about this, the use of English. So one of my questions, which is often a student question, is what are keyword transformations, which I think is part four in B2, reading and use of English. So what's a keyword transformations and why do they matter? Why do they have, why do students have to do them?
So I think keyword transformations, they're like a little language puzzle. Mm. And I think for some people, I think if you're the kind of person that likes puzzles and riddles, you often get them. But if you don't like puzzles, they can be very frustrating. Mm. So they test lots of different aspects of grammar and vocabulary in a very controlled way. And I think lots of people get quite obsessed with them.
Because they're double marks. Yeah.
One, my advice is don't get too obsessed with them. They're one part of a much bigger exam. So that's my first bit of advice. But secondly, there are techniques which I help my students with to help you work them out. Because like doing any puzzle, when you understand what they're asking for, you can see the answer more easily. So you do need to know those grammar structures and vocabulary that they're testing. If you don't know them, you're never going to know the answer.
Yeah.
But they're not impossible.
No, that's true. And it's great that you've said they're just one part of a seven.
Reading and listening.
Yeah, and I think getting stuck on them and wasting time doesn't serve you, does it?
Yeah, exactly. I think that's part of your wider strategy when you approach the exam. So you need to know which parts of that exam you need to spend more or less time on, which bits you can do more quickly. And, you know, when it gets to actually doing the exam, one thing I say is sometimes if you don't know the answer, you just don't know it. And don't spend lots of time, you know, kind of, oh my God. Move on.
Yeah, that's true. Do you advise your students sometimes to approach that paper not in the order of the sections?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. And I suggest different ways to do it, but I think that you need to find the order that works for you. And that might mean starting with the sections that you feel most confident about, or starting with the ones that you need to spend more time on. But I think, and again, this is coming back to, we talked about time for preparation. This is not, in my opinion, an exam that you can prepare for very quickly, because working this out takes time. You know, you need to do a few practice papers to work out what order you want to do it in.
Yeah.
You can do it in the order of the exam, and that's fine too.
Yeah, exactly. And with the digital exam as well, you can move between the sections
in exactly the same way. You can flick through and come back, and it highlights like what you've answered and what you haven't.
Yeah, that helps you manage time. Yeah. And that,
yeah.
I mean, we both work one-to-one with students, and I think each student will have their own preferences and their own strategies that work for them.
I think that's really important, that as teachers we can recommend strategies and, you know, different strategies for different parts, but ultimately you have to find what works for you. And sometimes I've worked with students where they've gone, no, your advice is not the advice for me. You know, it's like, and that's fine. That's absolutely fine.
Yeah, that's good self-awareness, isn't it? Yeah. So you've touched on this already, but this is a common question from students, which is, what's the best way to improve quickly?
In my opinion, there are no quick fixes, magic tricks, shortcuts, hacks.
Yeah.
But, you know, I do think if you can work, every day for 20 minutes in a focused way that makes your brain work. Like it has to make your brain work, not like just looking at your notebook at that list of words, like doing something.
Yeah. Yeah.
Making your memory work.
Yeah, kicking it into action. Yeah, rather than going a couple of weeks because you're too busy and then doing a kind of binging session or a massive study session and then leaving it for another couple of weeks. It's not so effective.
No, absolutely not. And you will need to find longer periods than 20 minutes when you're working. But if you can get into a habit of that sort of 20 minutes a day.
Yeah.
I've actually got a kind of habit tracker that takes you through this process. Because sometimes it's hard to find that, you know, when you say 20 minutes a day, it's like, whoa, I can't do that.
Yeah.
But if you sort of build that up gradually, then it becomes kind of, you know, second nature, it becomes a habit that, time for English now.
Great. Yeah, I'll put all the links to your Instagram and your website and all the useful sites in the show notes. So yeah, if you're interested in downloading the habit tracker, is that what it's called?
Yeah, I'm calling it that.
Yeah, call it that. And it's kind of an analogy with building up your stamina as an athlete. You know, you can't run a race if you've only practiced a couple of... some super athletes can. There are always exceptions, but it is that regular practice and building up your knowledge and building up your exam stamina and your skill. Yeah,
I think the sort of the running a race, the marathon analogy is really good. Like, because also you don't run a marathon by just running a marathon. You have to practice, you know, building up slowly, but also the different skills, you know, you have to do exercises and stuff to kind of get that fitness there. You don't just run a marathon every week for 3 months. So again, it's not just doing lots and lots of practice papers, but, you know, the different skills and breaking down the different parts of the exam.
Yeah, spot on. Okay. All right. The next question then is, why do you think people need a teacher to prepare for the exam rather than just doing lots of self-study?
Yeah. If we come back to this marathon analogy, some people don't. Some people can just, you know, they know what to do, they can do the exam and they're fine.
They can run with it.
You know. Yeah. But, you know, not all of us are built that way, you know. So again, it really depends on the individual. And so the way I like to work with people is work on the areas that they really need help with. So it might be that things like reading or listening are quite easy for you and you need less help with those areas, and you can just practice a few times. I think the key areas that are really difficult to do without a teacher, but not impossible, are probably speaking and writing, because that involves getting feedback on what you produce, what you say, your performance, and I think that's where a teacher's really really helpful.
Yeah.
I think the other advantage of a teacher is, you know, I already know what the exam's like and I already know some good strategies, so I can teach you those strategies. You can work those out for yourself, but a teacher can just point you in the right direction. It's about saving time, right?
Yeah, and getting really valuable feedback. So listening and reading, traditionally known as passive skills, we call them receptive skills now, and speaking and writing are productive, active skills where you have an idea of how well you're doing, but until you get some feedback from somebody that really knows and has experience of helping people through that exam, it's really valuable.
The way that I work is to kind of do a combination of self-study and, you know, obviously classes, because there are parts that you can do by yourself. I want to make the most of that so that, you know, you use your time effectively.
Yeah. This has been super, super useful so far. I was just wondering if you had any other things that you'd like to comment on before I ask you my final question.
I'm waiting to see what the final question's going to be.
It's a question that I ask all of my guests, actually, but this one is for exam English. So do you have a final tip for people to grow their English?
I think that to grow your English, you need to be active.
Yeah.
I think that is my big tip. You need to be active in how you are practicing, studying, using. And so going back to, okay, a good example, perhaps, lots of people say, hey, watch loads of Netflix in English and you'll get better. And, you know, that might be helpful for some people, but unless you're doing something active with that Netflix, if you're just sitting watching, I think for most people, it won't make a big difference. But if you are actively using that, noticing new language, recording it, as we said before, then trying to use it in your writing, use it when you're speaking, like this is the way you, you'll get better.
Yeah.
And that applies to an exam as well, because essentially the language you want to use in the exam is real, authentic language.
Yeah.
And I think that's really important, that sometimes there's this separation between like, oh, there's what I have to do for the exam and then real English. And those things are the same.
Yeah.
Be active and you will make improvements. You will grow.
Yes, you will grow. And you will grow little and often. Yeah, yeah, that's really true. I think you can learn kind of by osmosis, by kind of soaking it up. The Netflix example is a good one. And you'll, you know, you can watch a whole show and think, oh, that was funny, or that was entertaining, or I learned about this topic. But unless you hit pause and use another gardening analogy to kind of dig in to the bits that you weren't quite sure about, exactly how something was said or whatever the new vocabulary might be, and really kind of take a more studied approach, you're missing part of the picture.
I think those passive activities are probably better for maintaining your level of English, but not really for growing and expanding and developing and improving. In fact, what I think is, you know, if it's too easy, it's probably not doing very much.
Yeah.
But that's not to say it can't be enjoyable.
Yeah, because as you said at the beginning, it's taking an exam isn't the easiest way to prove your level of English.
Absolutely not.
But I think the Cambridge exams in particular, you're not expected to be a subject specialist in any of the topics that come up.
Absolutely.
And they're
not
interesting topics that, you know, that we're exposed to if we watch documentaries or TV series or listen to different things or read different things. It's kind of widening that knowledge base.
The B2 first exam, the topics are all the kind of things that you would read about in the newspaper or read about online or watch on TV. Mm-hmm. So there's nothing that you wouldn't be able to talk about, and you're absolutely not being tested on your knowledge of any of these subjects.
It's a communicative approach.
Exactly. It's how you're able to talk about them, write about them,
get your ideas across. Perfect. Hopefully the people listening who are thinking about taking a Cambridge exam or who are currently studying for a B2 first have gain something from you sharing all of these wonderful ideas and got some confidence, perhaps got some new strategies and ways of working. As I said, I will put Sangeeta's links and social information in the show notes, the link to the habit tracker and her website, maybe a bit of extra Cambridge exam information that I can link. Thank you so much, Sangeeta.
Oh, thank you.
Really helpful.
Nice to chat.
Yeah, really insightful, really nice chat. Thank you very much for listening. And next time we will be talking about the next level up, which is the Cambridge C1 Advanced exam with Yelena. Thank you again, Sangeeta. It's been wonderful.
Thank you very much.
And for now, to everybody listening, bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
The Grow Your English podcast, come and find me on Instagram @eltreeonline.